The small towns of Canada. The map of Canada, like the maps of most countries, is peppered with curious names. Names like Honeymoon Bay, Whitehorse, Cupid's, and Tatamagouche. In this series, presented by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, we penetrate the reality behind some of these names and learn the stories of the names themselves. On this program, we visit one of Canada's newest towns, Deep River, Ontario. Here with the unusual story of Deep River is Lloyd Robertson of the CBC.
Following the Ottawa River to a point 130 miles north and west of Canada's capital city, the river reaches its deepest point, said to be some 270 feet. In 1944, a momentous decision was to turn a hitherto bleak, unarable area into one of the world's most famous atomic sites. Atomic Energy of Canada moved to a point on the Ottawa near the tiny community of Chalk River, bringing with it scientists and skilled workers. These people, who were engaged in the mysterious and highly technical work surrounding the atom, decided to name the settlement of their choice, unpretentiously, Deep River, in honor of the clear, deep water nearby. Dr. David Keyes is one of Canada's most renowned physicists and is now a scientific advisor to the president of Atomic Energy of Canada. He tells us about the unusual development of this unique community.
They had to find a place where there was a good supply of clean, cold, fresh water. It had to be within railway connections with a large center, such as Montreal or Toronto or some other large city, so that supplies would come. And looking around at different places, they decided on this area near Chalk River. The government then expropriated 10,000 acres near Chalk River for the plant site. And then about 7 miles further up the river, where there was a good beach and a nice wide part of the Ottawa River, which looked almost like a lake, they expropriated 900 acres of land for the site of the village. At that time, they thought the village ought to be away off from the plant, you see.
This was because of possible explosions?
Yes, the people didn't understand. Of course, nowadays, you could, like in Sweden, they build the plant right in the middle of the city.
Uh-huh.
But at that time, this was a nice place for a village. So that houses then were started in 1944. It was sandy. They laid out some streets. They brought some houses, little wartime fours they were called, some wartime sixes. There were people moved up with their families. They were young. The average age for many years, for the first 12 or 13 years of the after the plant started here, never went above 33 for the men living in the village of Deep River. This site of the village was occupied really by five Indian families. They had little Indian log cabins. They did fishing and hunting and worked in the woods and lumbering companies. Well, they were moved out and compensated when the village started in this. Well, it's rather amusing. In the early days, of course, there were no stores. Some married women came up, and they had to come up quickly as the plant got going. They had a one store was a butcher shop was in a house. The children, the mothers had to go to Pembroke to buy food before this and buy other things. So the company, which owned the village, of course, operated a bus line so that the mothers could take the children and their babies on the bus and go to Pembroke to buy their books and back, and went for nothing. It was a free ride. There was no other way to get things.
What about medical facilities in the
Well, they started, yes. They built a hospital. And this hospital, of course, has been enlarged several times since it was built. It was started up at the same time as the staff hotel in the village. See, there were quite a number of young men and young women as secretaries, so that they had to have a staff hotel in which these people lived. And you can easily understand, too, that in the early days there were a lot of marriages, these people thrown together in a staff hotel.
Uh-huh.
Propinquity, of course, leads to this sort of thing, so there were quite a lot of marriages. There were a number of English men here, and they married Canadian girls, and we had an American liaison officer, and he Used to bring up his secretaries from the southern states, you know, with those soft accents. Wasn't long before they were married off to other people, too. Very interesting place.
Up until 1957, Deep River was a company town. Then, on the suggestion of Atomic Energy of Canada, it was incorporated as a municipality. It was felt that the residents would take a greater and more permanent interest in the community if they were allowed to buy their own homes. A little more than a year later, in 1958, Deep River became a town with an elected mayor and council. Individuality is now becoming obvious. The austere, gray, square-windowed staff buildings and wartime houses are now being dwarfed by new homes, commercial buildings, and schools. In fact, here would seem to be the prototype of the modern, well-planned suburban community. Row upon row of houses on winding, well-paved, treed streets, an adequate sandy beach, a beautiful yacht club, and something every Deep River resident will want to tell you about, the golf course, which he helped to build. Yes, these young enthusiasts, with an average age of 35, are proud of their community. This ideal town has been created through their own initiative and hard work. Driving up Highway 17, the tall green water tower carrying the words Deep River first draws your attention to the town. However, if you decided to turn off the highway and move into the business district, you could become very confused. Downtown Deep River is actually three shopping centers located more or less in one area. Dominating the scene is a new, large, L-shaped building with six floors called the New Staff Hotel, one of the most modern apartment hotels you'll find anywhere. In its attached offices, I found Mayor Frank Hammond, who was quick to explain the reason for the shape of the downtown district.
We originally designed the town to accommodate about 200 families, and we now have 1,200. The design originally was for one shopping center, which the company constructed and leased to operators at the time. As we grew, we found a need for more specialist type of stores than the ones we had included in the original center. We were able to get private enterprise to come in and construct a second shopping center and provide the specialist type of store that was needed. When we became incorporated, business and the town had grown so that there was a need for still a third shopping center, and this was again constructed by private enterprise after incorporation.
Despite the growth of the past few years, the town still has only one industry located 7 miles down the river. Since atomic energy is the livelihood of these people, a visit to Deep River also means a visit to the atomic energy plant. I'm standing now in a high-ceilinged red brick building which houses one of the two reactors here at Chalk River. The atomic pile inside this tall cylindrical reactor is housed in depth insulation and is entirely controlled from the outside. The sound we're hearing is coming from pumps circulating heavy water to reduce the heat generated by nuclear fission. This heavy water, which is actually a compound similar to water, is purchased from the United States. Water from the Ottawa River is used to cool the heavy water, and then it, in turn, cools the reactor. There are some 2,300 people employed here at Atomic Energy of Canada. About 200 of these are scientists. Some work in the allied trades, and still others are employed to do the immense amount of maintenance work which must be carried out to keep the project operating efficiently. With me now is Dr. W.B. Lewis, Vice President of Research and Development for Atomic Energy of Canada. Dr. Lewis, could you tell us what are the areas in which these various groups work?
The center of the establishment is our two large reactors, the NRX and NRU reactor. These are heavy water reactors, and their main function now is to do tests of fuel elements and assemblies under conditions that are appropriate to power reactors. But at the same time, a lot of basic scientific work is going on. There are international groups working on the neutrons that we get from the NRU reactor.
We're familiar with the isotopes you manufacture for cancer treatment, as well as some of the research on the effects of radiation on the human cells. What do you do with the radioactive waste material that accumulates from the project?
We have a very fortunate geological basin here, and we bury the material, sometimes sealed up in concrete blocks, sometimes in sort of drain pipes, and if they're suitable, directly in the ground. And we monitor all the groundwater around there so that we know we can drink it.
I see. So there is no danger to the people working here at Atomic Energy of Canada or the area surrounding?
No, and our safety record is good, like that of other atomic energy establishments.
How much of this work would be secret or confidential now, Doctor?
Oh, very little now, because we're engaged in the peaceful uses only, and most of the confidential work is associated with weapons and military uses.
And you're not concerned with this?
Very little.
Back in Deep River, these people have brought a different kind of fame to the town they live in. It is known to have one of the finest recreation programs in North America. There are some 70 clubs active here, running the gamut from Scotch dancing to ceramics. Jack Cropley is the friendly, energetic young man who directs these activities. I asked him to give us an example of just how something is organized.
For instance, you might have a group of people who would like to play volleyball. And we would say to them, well, go out and get a good sizable list of people who you know are genuinely interested. Come on down and we'll talk it over. And if they come back and have got a list, then we'll sit down with them, try and provide adequate time for them on a gym floor, or if we have no gym space, to try and see if we can work out an outdoor volleyball court and work with them in getting the program going. If they need help in the way of a clinic, a volleyball clinic, to show them the techniques, then we'll work with them again and try to bring someone in to do this.
The interest must come from them first, though.
Oh, yes. I think our job as professionals is to possibly help to increase the appetite for some types of leisure pursuits, or expose people to new ideas or new programs that we hear are working elsewhere and might fit in well. But primarily, recreation must be what the people would like to do themselves. It isn't a directed program in the sense you say, well, today we all go play lacrosse and tomorrow we all go trout fishing, because this would run against the grain as a true democratic recreation program.
I asked him how he accounted for this tremendous interest in recreation.
I believe that the interest is due primarily to the kind of people that we're fortunate in working with. I think there, many of them have been exposed to recreational experiences before they've come here. As you realize, about 40% of the community are college or university people, and probably in their college days they've had smatterings of opportunities in various types of recreation. And when they come here with their family, they are usually wanting to try some of these out if they haven't done too much before they left college. But they are also provided to work. I think this is the essential thing. They are prepared to roll up their sleeves and actually do some work.
Deep River is a town where IQs are said to be above average, and there is more than just the normal interest in education. Ironically, this town, built because of the age of the atom, looks forward to a secure, if quiet, future.
That was Lloyd Robertson of the CBC.